That doesn't mean all analytics are bad.
No. It's
not. Do not print in the paper that I said that all that stuff doesn't matter. It does.
I got him, guys. I got him.
Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell. Today, I'm going to talk about the Jets defense and what people are missing after their surprising 3-3 start. But first, we're going to talk about one of the biggest stories of the 2023 season. No, it's not that weird KFC ad where Deion Sanders shows up for 10 seconds. It is Brock Purdy and the great Brock Purdy debate. Is he a scrub who happens to be stuck in a great offense? Is he a star who is being unfairly maligned for being lucky enough to play with some great players? Did the Browns expose Brock Purdy last week? Joining me to talk about all that is one of the very few people I trust to discuss this topic, one of the most level-headed, thoughtful, and insightful people covering football on the internet. It is my friend from The Athletic and Yahoo. It is Nate Tice. Nate, how are you, sir?
What an intro. Level-headed. I'm going to just clip that 10 seconds.
Can I actually ask you a question?
Yes.
What's the opposite of level-headed? Like, is there a...
It just goes from level to hot, right?
Hot-headed? So there's no cold-headed person?
I don't think there's just cool, right? Just cool, yes. Calm, and collected. So, I don't know where level, because there's not a level temperature.
Right. So would you be unlevel-headed if you were not a level-headed person?
And then that feels mean.
It does. It feels very pointed.
I see a lot of young children these days, and they have the helmet on, you know, to like give that more symmetrical head shape. So yeah, that feels very mean. My son had to do it at nights for a few months, my wife again is going to just, if she listens to this, is just going to be, why are you talking about this on a podcast? Bill's a friend, and yes. So you guys have met. So. Yeah, so the doctor comes in and just, it must sound like when I, or you probably as well, when my mom listens to a podcast and I use EPA or DVOA or something like that. She's like, you know, it's a 77 and we think we can get to 79.1 with a little bit of luck, 79.2. And my wife and I looked at each other like, what does that mean? And it was just talking about head circumference or something of that sort. But it was, yeah, but a long rant, a terrible story to tell you. I don't know what the opposite of level-headed would be.
I have total faith. We'll figure it out by the end of the show. And you know what, Nate, you're a dad. Dads are allowed to podcast about whatever they want. That's right. Kind of, you earn that as a dad. That is the dad credo.
I appreciate that.
When your baby leaves the nursery. We're not going to talk about babies today. We're going to talk about quarterbacks and a quarterback who is on my mind, and that is Brock Purdy. And I want to start with this, Nate, because I feel like there's been a lot of entrenching happening on the internet, really about a lot of topics, but Brock Purdy is one of them. Either you're a Brock Purdy stan, you're a Brock Purdy denier, you're a hater. Where do you stand in general in this Brock Purdy debate relative to what you see in the conversation from other people? Do you feel like you're somewhere in the middle? Where do you fall just broadly?
I have been really trying to follow the manifesto of Switzerland and just being nice and neutral, nice and yeah, he's fine. And the offense sure does help, right, guys? And just play both sides. Hey, here's a cool throw. Right. Yeah, I know they get a lot of help. Right, guys. So I've been playing both sides because as a survivor, maybe it's not even my early internet days, but when I became more active on Twitter, of the Jimmy G wars, I have my scars from that and the discussions and the memes. I think I used a social network meme at one point during that discussions about 49er fans. So I'm just going to be neutral. I think both sides do have cases and they are making points, but it is somewhere in the middle where it's a quarterback I think this is the difference with it all is the denominator is different between a quarterback like Purdy or in a quarterback that we consider an elite one. I think a consensus elite one, like a Josh Allen or a Patrick Mahomes. I'm not going to say some other guys. I'm not going to say like a Herbert or a Lamar and have everyone yell at me.
Herbert's a scrub. You didn't see the Monday night game. We're done with
Herbert. He's done. Hey, island games matter more. I think that Island games, I've learned, even if it's London at 6:30 in the morning West Coast time, those games matter way more than if it was played at 10 a.m. West Coast time. That is that's a huge difference that I think everyone needs to learn. They count more in the standings too.
It really is remarkable how much more I hear about people after Island games. It's 100% true if you're a football content person.
It's insane. It's like, and honestly, Monday nights can sometimes be like a quasi off night for me. I'll watch stuff, but I'm not very like actively studying it unless it's something interesting. But you know, Chargers Cowboys. So it's like, okay, this is a very interesting game. Yep. I was like, oh yeah, some good, some bad. And then I just saw the takes happening on Twitter, and I was just like, oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. What is going on?
To be fair, Chargers Cowboys, Island game, prime time, midseason, like you could have seen that the result of that game, no matter how it went down, was going to be take theater. Like there's no way people were going to watch that game and be like, oh, that was two solid quarterbacks playing well played football. No, that was going to be whoever lost that game was a disaster.
It's whatever the word that we figure out is the opposite of level headed. That is what that game was. It felt like in Oppenheimer, the scene when they're talking about all the ingredients they need to make the bomb.
Yes.
And that's what that game was. It was like them dropping those things into the glass bowls, just going, yep, this is what, yep, here we go. Oh, Monday night, Mike McCarthy. Oh, yes. Brandon Staley, a fourth down decision by Brandon Staley. Oh my God. I couldn't believe that one. And it failed. Oh my God. Like it was 2 minute drive for Justin Herbert. Oh my God. Look at all this. Yeah. So it,
components.
It did have a little bit of everything. I don't even know where I was going with all this, but I think it was, but yes, it's just that, going back to the Purdy stuff, it's just that that denominator is different. And I think does he make several good throws a game? Yeah, he does. The Cowboys game, he had one driver. He made three, really. One got called back, but two plus throws, S-tier throws, I would even call them, A-tier throws. But I think the difference is, and why I think some people get frustrated on the other side, is that when you watch what we call the elite guys, they're doing 12, 14 of those a game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we get caught in the middle, because there's no nuance ever, and especially online and especially on Twitter.
Well, we're gonna try here in this podcast, and I think one way to approach this is to try and split the question up, because it's such a wide-reaching question, right? Yeah. Like I think, you know, we can't actually see what Brock Purdy would be like in the Commanders offense or the Titans offense, right? But let's try and start with him in the context of the 49ers offense, and let's start with him in relation to Jimmy Garoppolo, who the guy of course inspired plenty of wild opinions, as you mentioned, over his several years in San Francisco. So by the numbers, Brock Purdy is playing better than Jimmy Garoppolo. He has a better win-loss record. That's the most important one, obviously. But you know, like his...
What's his record in night games, Bill?
I don't know. He doesn't play many night games. That's a good point. Brock Purdy's numbers are better. And this year they've gotten better than they were even a year ago for Brock Purdy. So even given that Garoppolo had Christian McCaffrey, as Purdy did for a stretch, I want to start with this. And this is a tough question, but they're all going to be tough questions here for you today, Nate. Is there something you would say watching Purdy play that you think he does well or better than Garoppolo that's helped driven an increase in the performance and the efficiency of the Niners offense?
I think some of it is pushing the ball. And I don't think even like air yards is kind of like justified that. I haven't looked at a one-to-one for that, but I would say there's a little bit more aggression with Purdy than Jimmy G has ever had, especially, you know, deeper throws. This is what, even with that game against the Browns on Sunday, if Ayuk doesn't kind of misjudge that one post throw, then this is a whole different discussion that we're having and kind of going through under the fire. But those are the throws that I think Purdy does better. I think some of the creation stuff he does do a little bit better, but he's not like great, if that makes sense. It's, you know, Jimmy G doesn't create much at all. So if Purdy is even just average at that, it's a step up. So I do say a little bit of creation, he's better than Jimmy. And I would say pushing the ball. And I think that's kind of the consensus that a lot of people have said about Purdy. I think they are comparable. And, you know, going to the right spot, I think a lot of quarterbacks in that offense get to go to the right spot a lot because it's kind of due. It's either that or Shanahan's going to rip your head off if you don't.
Or trade you to the Cowboys.
Yes, or trade you to the Cowboys or put you on the bench. And then it's like, and then you become just a great overall receiver like Brandon Ayuk, like, you know, like that yes. morphing. But I think that's, those are the things that stand out to me with Purdy is that he has a little bit more of a lively arm. I would say not that Jimmy G has a poor arm at all. But I think he's willing to use it a little bit more. He's a little bit more chaotic. Mm-hmm. But I think that has kind of been not shown, but that is one aspect that he does bring. You've only seen that chaotic nature a couple times this year because he hasn't mm-hmm. needed to. But I do think that is what he brings to the table. That's a little bit different than Jimmy G.
Yeah. I think the sort of the chaotic nature and the, you know, the ability to, or the need, I guess, to thrive in situations where he has to throw or
yeah.
defensive ends can pin their ears back and go after him. Like that's a double-edged sword as well, because he hasn't had to really do that yet. The Browns game might be the exception during that 2-minute drill, but this reminds me a little bit of the Lamar Jackson comeback stats where people would be like, Lamar Jackson has never led a comeback, or he's like terrible when he's trailing in the second half. And it's like, yeah, but he's also the best quarterback in football at building first half leads. Like, doesn't that seem like a good thing?
Tiger Woods never came back on Sunday.
Right. Like the LeBron or the Jordan never lost in the finals thing because right. he lost in the first three rounds. Like with Purdy, like are we not giving him enough credit for being so good early in games that the Niners haven't had to be in situations where he's needed to throw to catch up? Or do you think that's still a really viable concern for you, because it's inevitable that that's going to be the case, that he's going to have to be in those situations at some point yeah. more frequently moving forward?
I think that is going to be a concern. It's always a concern with the Shanahan offense. This is like what you're determining. Is it a bug or a feature? Right. The Shanahan offense has never been made to just drop back 100 times, you know, drop back over and over and over and over and over and over. And so I do think that is something that you put the ball in Purdy's hands, and that's the aspect of a drop back passing game, is you're letting the quarterback decide which of the five options is best while navigating a pocket. A play action is, oh, we only have two guys out on the routes, and really, you know, maybe a check down. So 2.5 routes. And I just have to determine, I have to read off one guy to determine where to go with this ball. Dropback is I'm reading the coverage, and then I'm reading one specific part of that coverage, but I first have to determine what coverage it is. So if they change up the look post snap, that might throw me off. So I do think it's always going to be a concern with Purdy and with this offense. The thing is, the 49ers have this awesome defense. They got a great run game. So they are always going to be in a lot of games. They are an excellent team. I still consider them the best team right now. Mm-hmm. And sure. I mean, pending health, but sure. it's that you have to have a positive game script if I'm the opposing team to even get them into these situations like the Browns did. But how many defenses can do that realistically? They just shredded the Cowboys a week ago, who I think has a very good defense.
Yes.
So that's what it's all about, game script against these guys. But that's easier said than done. That's like the classic, well, if you just rush with four, it's like, well, yeah, I wish I could do that. But not a lot of teams have defensive lines like yeah. the Jets or the Browns or anything like that.
Dude, if you just get physical with the death lineup of the Warriors, like,
oh, yeah,
they're going to have to go bigger. That's inevitable. And yet we're like 6 years later and they're like, oh, they have like three titles now.
How do you stop Jokic? Oh, just yes. have two centers that can play defense against them the entire game. How many teams have even one? And you need two.
Distract him with horse noises over the PA. Like, there's not really a great solution to stop this offense besides, no. you know, play really well on offense, get ahead early, and force them to be one-dimensional. But that does not happen with this right. offense.
Easier said than done.
And I think what makes this so tough is that the cheat code of this Shanahan offense, and for years now, going back to his time with the Texans, is they're so good on first down. Like right. even when he's had like Rex Grossman and people like that at quarterback, even when the offense hasn't been good, almost always the offense is significantly better than the rest of the pack on first down. And Purdy has been incredible there. And I guess I'm wondering, Nate, like, in terms of what you see from Shanahan, in terms of what he puts on his quarterback's plate, on Purdy's plate, is there anything different that he's done more with Purdy that you feel like implies to you that he's maybe a little more confident in Purdy with this element of the offense, with this element of, you know, what Shanahan calls versus what he had with Garoppolo.
The in pocket play action stuff, so not just the nakeds and bootleg stuff, but the in pocket play action stuff has, to me, just eye test, and again, not having looked at stats with this, but just that's seen more vertical. And
these are Nate Gen stats, to be clear.
Nate. yes, exactly. This is just pure eye test, which it's good, right? That's legal tender.
Yes. No, right? You're not gonna get thrown out of the podcast. You're fine.
Okay, we're good. But that's to me is what I see the most. It's not as many quick hitters. Jimmy G is a quick hitting machine, even with the Raiders right now. It's he likes those in breaking routes to be 1-2-3 ball out. So even on the play action stuff, it's the flash fake with then the ball's thrown. I would say that it seems to me that the play actions, they still do that aspect. That's always going to be an aspect of this offense, is that they're doing more of those heavy play actions down the field. That could also be because they have Brandon Ayuk and they have George Kittle. That could also be an aspect, but you know, Jimmy G had those guys for a little bit. So sure. I also think that maybe that's also because the offensive line, I think overall, is a much better unit than they've had in the past. The right tackle is still a question mark, but I think the other four guys are more solid than what they've had in the past. So I think you can attack further down the field with that. So again, it's a lot of chicken and the egg. That's what's a lot of fun with football. It's like, is that because they have a better offensive line? Do they like Purdy's arm? Do they like the weapons? I think it's a little bit of all of it. Yep. So that's where I see it the most. I would say a lot of the passing game, though, it's very similar. A lot of the drop back stuff is very, very similar. A lot of high lows, a lot of choice routes. But that's what they did with Jimmy G before. That's what this offense is. So there's a lot of similarities, but again, it's that vertical element.
Of course. And if you were going to draw up an offense with Christian McCaffrey,
right,
you'd be like, hey, let's throw in a few choice routes, take advantage of that guy against linebackers. Let's get George Kittle up the seam and running dig routes behind those linebackers. Like it's not rocket science, but it's also just playing to your player's strengths.
That's
it. I have a question for you about McCaffrey and this offense, because I think Mina Kimes, our my colleague, I would say our mutual friend Mina Kimes,
yes,
has mentioned this several times. The Niners, or teams covering the Niners, changed the way they covered after McCaffrey arrived last year. So I think, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the Niners faced really heavy amounts of zone coverage the first 6 weeks of the 2022 season. Since McCaffrey's been there, they faced the second highest rate of man coverage of any team in football. Now, obviously, this is automated stuff. You might take issue sometimes with their ability to differentiate between zone and man match and straight up man to man. And, you know, I'm not going to say the numbers are completely gospel, but whatever is being put in to analyze this is seeing a dramatic shift for the Niners. So if you're thinking about why teams would cover the Niners that way and play more man coverage post McCaffrey, why do you think that would be?
Oh man, just probably because against zone, against this team, a lot of those concepts that Shanahan likes, especially the quick game stuff, is just 7 yard. You're just getting peppered with 7 yard gains.
Right.
It's those high lows that I just talked about, or even the play action game, where okay, those linebackers get sucked up or they take the underneath route, and those are the gashes over the middle. That's Ayuk breaking across the field. You'd see even against the Cowboys, they run cover two. Okay, yeah, we're gonna keep everything in front of us. We'll run cover two. There's Debo Samuel on a huge dig route, boom, getting hit and going for a huge gain on third and long. And that's why you don't want to lean into that as much. But it's also the man coverage stuff is actually interesting to me because how Shanahan breaks it. He will put Debo Samuel in the backfield. And because then in man coverage, if you have a cornerback on Debo Samuel, that cornerback is now in the box to defend the run. And you do not want that. And he will put CMC outside. So that he's very good in just, again, simple ways. But I mean, I wish other teams did it. You also need the Swiss Army knives that he has to do it.
Yes.
But I think that that's what it is. If I were just kind of like to put it in just like a simplest terms, it's like he just doesn't want those depth, because those choice routes, we always think of them as the inbreakers, all those angle routes. The first read is if it's zone, I'm sitting. And I would sit right there. And that's, I mean, Alvin Kamara has made a living off of that, but that's just 7 yards a pop, 10 mm-hmm. yards a pop. And if you have CMC breaks one tackle, that's 20 yards. Yep. But or if you have other players running that route, it's the same thing. So I would say that's why is that they're just terrified of that, and they'd rather just man it up and just hold on to their hat and figure out different ways with that.
And teams have blitzed more as well, I think, to try and stress Purdy. And so I think that maybe has led to more man coverage or things that have been identified as man coverage rates as well.
I'm curious because like even like the Chiefs faced a lot of man coverage last year. And I also kind of figured out after the fact, it's because they chose to be throwing against those looks. So they have a lot of man zone kills. So that might be another thing is that when teams are in man coverage is that the 49ers are going like, okay, great. We got him. Like we're gonna, okay. We got him a man. Okay. We're going to kill, or we're going to check. We're going to alert this play that is more, that is better against man coverage. So sometimes that's an aspect of this too, is that these teams choose this adventure to attack.
Yeah. There's definitely a self-selection bias. That's a really good point. You know, when it comes to this stuff and, you know, I think that comes up a lot when you think about like box counts and teams running into heavy boxes where it's like, well, yeah, duh. Like if there's six people in the box, teams are going to run effectively and run more. Like it's not like, you know, maybe the Chiefs in the AFC championship game against the Bengals when they were like 4-man boxes and they're like, no, we're going to throw.
Oh,
we're
you remember fine. That Twitch stream?
I
that
do. Was, but you know, like most of the time, like if the box is full, teams are going to throw and they're going to be effective throwing the football because there's not many guys in coverage, but that's defined by the defense, not defined by the offense.
Such a good point, because the most basic killed play, alerted play, when you get two plays in a play call is run to pass, which is, you know, you got a run play and then kill a pass play. Mm-hmm. And that is based off of the most simplest read is single high, two high. If it's single high, I am going to kill into a pass play, meaning that is going to be a loaded box because the number count changes. So that's it's all based off personnel, situation, formation. Like you're not going to go single high against most of the time against an empty formation. Most defenses check into a two high coverage. Mm-hmm. And so again, like you're saying, it's just selection bias sometimes with the box count stuff. I cringe sometimes.
I just want to say, I need to add, that doesn't mean all analytics are bad.
It's not.
Do not print in the paper that I said that all that stuff doesn't matter.
I got it. I got him, guys. Got him.
You just have to be thoughtful. That's all it is.
That's all it is.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better with the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country. There is no competition. And right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a Jets Pizza location near you. Again, try Jets Signature 8-Corner Pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, SAVE. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be. Going back to before the draft, when Purdy ended up being taken with the final pick in the 2022 draft, how did you feel about Purdy? Like, what elements of Purdy's NFL performance, if we could go back now and say, hey, this is what Brock Purdy's become, what would surprise you the most about his play, allowing for the fact that it's in the context of the Niners offense?
I have started to really put quarterbacks into an archetype and not just, you know, comps and just saying that this guy's a version of each other, you know, like Justin Herbert and Ryan Tannehill are actually part of the same DNA, you know, or, you know, yeah, that's what it's like. It's like an animal, you know, like a tree, a lineage. Purdy to me was a Heineke, and that a runaround guy that can create some plays. You like him as a backup, can do some smart things, but, you know, limited in some aspects. And just sometimes his own chaotic nature can be his own worst enemy, but not bad as a backup because they can get hot and win you a game. And I would say that his overall, even though you see those just really glimpses of the chaotic nature, but his overall sense of calm has been really way more than I ever thought he could attain. And I think that is, of course, some of it with the coaching and the offense and everything, but it is a positive that he is getting to the right play and getting to the right read. And I knew he was smart, but just how consistently he's doing that now. And I think that is what's been so surprising. His work from in the pocket, if you want more of like a quarterback term for it. I think that has been what's surprising. I knew he could create plays and do, and you know, had some arm zip where he could push the ball when he wanted to outside the pocket or off platform. But I just thought, I didn't think that the down to down consistency was there from inside the pocket within structure. And so that's just been what's been just a pleasant surprise. That's the thing I've accepted with all this. I just want more good players and more good quarterbacks. So if a guy's playing well, I'm all for it. Like, this is great. But so that's what that he's been, as far as that work in structure, just been such a pleasant surprise. So I would say that has been what's the biggest difference. I was at every practice for Shrine Week here in Las Vegas. You'd watch him and all the other quarterbacks, and they're throwing routes on air, and No, he's missing balls. Like, he's not, like, every ball's perfect.
Oh, no.
It's really hard to say, like, oh, everyone missed on this guy. It's like, if you watched him in practice, you wouldn't have thought this. So that's what's just been cool.
The Teddy Bridgewater, the worst thing you can do.
Oh,
miss rats on air.
Did you do something? Yeah. What was it? Like, I
wrote about Bridgewater and Blake Bortles, and I was like, if you like Blake Bortles more than Bridgewater, if that's your kink, that's fine.
Yeah.
But like, don't let it be because he missed four passes on air in a workout in March. That's not a good reason to not think somebody's good or bad.
I can never get over that. Because even a couple of years ago, well, the Zach Wilson's got the infamous one now because of the trick shot.
Yeah.
But like, even like how they're run, like those quarterback things, like they're, you know, that's all scripted. Like, you know, it's like 75 perfect plays to make these guys look good. But then sometimes they don't even have a guy snapping them the ball. So they just snap the ball to themselves. The quarterback does. And every quarterback coach that does that, I'm like, that's no, like, get off, like, get out of here. Because like, the guy just gives himself the laces every single time. Like, this is so like artificial. It's imperfect.
That's how it works.
Usually. Oh my God. I know. I think the only impressive thing I've seen, there's been some impressive stuff, but the most impressive thing I've seen, or really the biggest like FU that I loved, was Andrew Luck's final throw on his pro day in the rain into the wind after everyone was like questioning his arm strength. And he just like launched one like 70 yards into the rain, into the wind. It was like just a total middle finger to everybody. That one was pretty sweet. But other than that, yeah, those pro days are just, they're the worst, man.
So I was going to ask, you know how people are like, man, I wish I could have gone to that concert. You know, I could see Led Zeppelin in this here or there. Do you wish you were at the Cal Bowler 50-yard throw off his knees pro day? You don't
think that the famous one?
That's the one I think of.
Okay. Didn't Jamarcus Russell do something too? I think he had like a same thing off his knees or whatever.
That was the one. I think John Gruden was the one who described it as Star Wars. Someone described his pro day as Star Wars.
Well, then we got the Johnny Manziel music full pads pro day.
Oh yeah. Well, that just seems fun.
That one actually was like, everyone's kind of was like, oh, that was, I actually think my dad was there because they had the offensive lineman. I think that year too. I think that was Jake Matthews. And I think he was like, yeah, actually it was pretty interesting. it was a great atmosphere or something like that.
You got to build it up a bit.
Oh my God, that one. Oh man, no, these are just going through my head. Yeah, the trick shot to the left one always gets me because it's just like, who cares? This is also like, isn't this just 80s baseball scouting? Oh, you should have seen him in the cage. Hear that ball pop off his bat.
It just sounds different.
It just sounds different. Well, he's only hitting 220. Yeah, but oh man, you should see it.
Should hear that 220.
But that's what it feels like sometimes. I feel like I'm in that world where those Moneyball scout stories sometimes.
Jamarcus Russell, my man. The Raiders finally got their big arm. And he's a good kid, strong kid, smart kid. He'll be a big-time player. If I'm the Raiders, that's who I pick. That's pretty easy, said Fox's Terry Bradshaw.
Ah, I remind him of him. Wasn't he just the 48% completion percentage to launch that ball down the field?
Yeah, except for the part where he got better.
That was
the one difference. You reminded him of the first few years where Bradshaw was like holding the Steelers back.
I will say Jamarcus Russell was one of our counselor coaches at the Manning Academy when I was in high school, and I legit saw him throw the ball 80 yards, and that's still,
I'm sure you did.
It's one of the most fake things I've ever seen in my life. And I grew up with Dante Culpepper and Gus Frat, who could launch the ball, and Jeff George. And Jeff George actually is up there too, but it's seeing those guys launch a ball and then seeing like a high schooler, I think he was a freshman in college, do that. I was like, what the hell did I just see? Like, cause it looks fake. Like a 60-yard throw is, impressive. 80-yard throw is like, it's one of the fakest things you ever see in your life. It's the Mickey Mantle 600-foot home run.
Yeah, or like the Michael Vick Powerade commercial.
Yes, it just kind of keeps climbing. I think that's why Sorry. Just go think about these things. Josh Allen will have a couple throws like that where he'll launch it and the ball kind of climbs again. It's just like, that's not physically possible, but here you are doing it.
Yes. It's like a fastball that rises. Like, I know that's not possible, but yes, it is possible somehow.
I read about that, like why they think it rises. I think it was Sports Illustrated. Wasn't it like the human eye is expecting it to dip? Yep. And because it dips less than you expect, it feels like it's rising.
I believe that is exactly what it is.
That sticks with me. That's why Herbert, a line drive thrower, some of these guys with these cannons, that's why their balls seem weird, because they just don't dip.
That's actually a good question. You brought up Jeff George.
Yeah.
What do you think Jeff George's I know obviously the off-field stuff was a problem with Jeff George. Yeah. Like, do you think he would have been classified as like a Herbert type guy? Like this early in his career, like, do you think he was just so subpar that it was like he couldn't do it because like the physical gifts were there?
I think it was more like Sam Howell.
Yeah. Like, he was the one. He wasn't like a fifth round pick.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what some of the issues too. I think it was obviously the gifts were there. I think he also just like he took way too long in the pocket. Like, he would just drop back there and just like, hey, okay, where is it, and throw it at the last second. And like, he was like always trick shots. So maybe like early Stafford.
Ooh, okay, I like that.
Maybe I think that might be a good comparison. Just like, oh my god, look at this talent. It's like, oh, there's just some inconsistencies, you're not sure, and he takes a little too long, maybe that, and a little too many negative plays. But Stafford's like a great guy, so and yes, George was I think very hard to coach, I think was a big difference as well.
Jeff George not friends with Clayton Kershaw at all, to my knowledge.
No, but really good. They did get along with Randy Moss, because they both love to fish. So that's a true story. They became good friends.
This is the late 90s Vikings insider conversation. That is a separate podcast for us, Nate.
I wish I was a neutral and those teams existed now, because the we would just be enamored with what those teams are. They're switching quarterbacks every year and they're scoring like,
and they're great.
They're great. This is awesome. What retread vet quarterback are we going to drop in now? Okay, sure. This
and that's the fun part, is it's not like Brock Purdy, like a random college player. Yeah. It's like a dude you thought retired 2 years ago.
Because some of them did.
It would be like if Carson Wentz came back and threw for 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns this year.
And they did it several times.
Yes.
Because they went Warren Moon, Brad Johnson, I think
Cunningham.
Cunningham, of course, and then Jeff George, and then that Culpepper year started.
So sick.
I know. And that was that's how I grew up, and I thought that was just all normal. You score 500 points a year, you watch a baseball team. I'm a Mariners fan. They win 116 games. They have Ken Griffey Jr. This is before that. Jr. and A-Rod and all these guys. This is how sports is, right? Right? No, it's not.
The Natalie Portman meme. Yes. I mean, yeah, but I think you do get like what you see early in your life as a sports fan, especially in football, I feel like attunes you to what you think football is. Like, growing up as a Giants fan for like the Dan Reeves Giants teams, I was like, oh, you just run the ball on first and second down 90% of the time. That's how offense works. Like, maybe you get a guy who can throw the ball 10 yards downfield, maybe, if you're lucky, but like 52% completion percentage, that's pretty good.
Well, that's even for me. You're saying like how you grew up. That's my Vikings teams. Those Viking teams is how I picture football. You score 30 points. It's a race to 30. That's what each game is. But also, when you pictured Dan Reeves, or when you said Dan Reeves Giants, I just pictured the Meadowlands and that turf. Mm-hmm. And that might also speaks to how you grew up watching the game, is like what you picture. I grew up going to the Kingdome and the Metrodome. And even in the Metrodome in Minnesota, the Gophers played there. So it's like, oh, I want to go see a college football game. It was still at the same stadium. Oh, I want to go see a baseball game. Same stadium. So it's like the artificial like turf stuff was always like in my head. And I remember my first time I went to Lambeau, and I think I was like 8 or 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this? It's like the sun's hot. It's like, this is no, like, what? I want 72 degrees in here. I'm worried, this is miserable. But that's how I grew up, was like going to indoor enclosed artificial stadiums. And I thought that was normal.
That is normal. It should be, at least, just without concrete turf.
Without, yes. Yeah.
couple more questions as we get back to the Purdy discussion.
Okay. I'm trying to hard right turn each one.
That's not your fault. That's my fault. I have a general question for you. And this comes up with the Niners because they're so good generating yards after catch. Like by all the expected yards after catch numbers, the Niners are number one in the NFL in terms of getting what more than what's expected. Just in the broader idea of yards after catch, do you think quarterbacks have any consistent ability to impact yards after catch? Do you think that's more a schematic thing? Do you think that's more a receiver and running back and tight end and playmaker based thing? Like, how do you apportion out like the impact of yards after catch and who gets to drive that?
I would say scheme would be the number one thing. Yeah. Because even a guy like I've seen, God, it's hard because like the yak stats are always just kind of hard to parse through because I've been trying to look at a lot of yak stats past the line of scrimmage. But even that's kind of a little noisy, but I think a lot of it is scheme. Do they ask a lot of screens? That's naturally going to push up. Do they ask for a lot of inbreakers and moving routes? I would say offenses that I kind of grew up with, and even that are run now, like what you see with the Chargers and the Kellen Moore offense, and even what he was doing with the Cowboys or a Sean Payton offense, a lot of those are more static routes, meaning they are stop routes, hitches, mm-hmm. where they curls, where they catch the ball and they're stopped. They're not moving at the catch point. Mm-hmm. And that's design. And so I would venture a guess that some of those yak numbers are down, but they also do moving routes, like choice routes that we talked about as well. Mm-hmm. So I do think most of it's schematic. And then I do think obviously the pass catchers help the most as well, because they are the ones breaking tackles. They are ones getting open. If it's man coverage, they are the ones doing all that. And then of course the quarterback placement. So if I were making a pie, like I would say scheme is the biggest portion of the pie. And then I would say pass catchers and quarterbacks are probably split about the, like 25%.
Mm-hmm. So here's the toughest part. The two final questions here are the toughest ones for you, Nate. How many quarterbacks in the NFL do you think could play as well as Purdy does in this offense?
Oh boy. Now,
I know like the easy ones, like yes, Mahomes, Herbert, Allen, et cetera, like the guys who are just freakishly athletically gifted are going to be able to do that. But there's a whole second tier. There's a whole mm-hmm. third tier of quarterbacks who are in that conversation. So it doesn't have to be exact. We can go quarterback by quarterback if you'd like, we can do that too. But I'll let you approach the answer however you'd like. How many quarterbacks do you think could play as well as Brock Purdy does in this Niners offense?
Okay, I'm counting in my head right now, or not in my head. I have a list right now, so give me 15 seconds.
Okay, I will fill that 15 seconds by naming Giants quarterbacks from the early 90s. We've got Phil Simms, we have Jeff Hostetler, Dave Brown, Tommy Maddox, Kent Graham, Danny Cannell. I think it's telling that like Kerry Collins felt like Steve Young relative to the quarterbacks I had seen in my young life. The fact that he could move even a tiny bit and had a solid arm felt like I was seeing it was the
rapture. Okay, I gotta count.
Okay, go ahead.
I am at in the like 19 to 21 range.
Wow. That's more than I expected.
That could do it just as well, if not better.
If not terms. Better.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, or at least comparable ballpark. So, I'd put it at like 19 to 20-ish, and with a couple toss-ups maybe in that order. So at least 16 would be like my number.
Who is the closest comparable for you where you felt like the guy in like the 17, 18, 19 range who you might have right alongside Purdy? Like who's in that group for you?
Like this year, like this season,
yeah.
like a Tannehill.
Wow. Okay.
Like, I know, but like a guy like, okay, then like, this was a good question for me. It was like a guy like Baker. I don't know, because I think Purdy operates better on time than him and can make some of those throws over the middle than him. So I'd actually have him better than Baker, who's having a good year. Yeah. So it's kind of some stylistic stuff. Like he's better obviously than Zach Wilson. But like a guy like Joshua Dobbs this year is comparable. At least. And but I would probably take Purdy slightly, but I think Dobbs is doing good stuff. But I would take him over in this type of offense over a guy like Jordan Love, even if I do like Jordan Love.
Sure.
But I would take Stroud over Purdy easily.
I think that's
fair. Yes. You know, I would take Geno over Purdy. Mm-hmm. I would take Purdy over Deshaun Watson right now. I would take, you know, I would easily take Dak over Purdy. And I'm going through the list right now after I said I wasn't going to do it. But I think that, like, a good, like a guy like Pickett is, that one's tough for me. Pickett has more tools, but I think Purdy plays the quarterback position better, if that makes sense. And that, but that one's hard for me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, one has better traits, but I actually think Purdy is a better at doing all the on-time stuff better than Pickett more consistently at this point in time. But again, he has Matt Canada calling plays for him. So, like, that one's tough. But I'd probably take Purdy at this point in time. But, you know, and then after that, like, that's kind of like his tier that I'm looking at. Those guys are debatable in that range.
Okay, how many retired quarterbacks would be better in this offense than Brock Purdy? Would Philip Rivers be better in this offense having retired for 3 years?
Oh, then for 3 years?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
I'm talking about this guy gets the call. He has 2 weeks to prepare. The Super Bowl scenario for last year.
Yeah, I'd say he could get the job done. Yeah.
How sad are you that we did not get Philip Rivers
in the Super Bowl
on 2 weeks notice?
That would have been amazing, wouldn't it? Because that felt real, because I know Shanahan loves him. And my one Kyle Shanahan story, because I was in personality, he was coaching in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But we would talk all the time. He was awesome. Like, he was so good to me, because it was a kind of a coach's kid thing more than anything. And I asked him one time, because we were talking about Rivers. It was me, him, and a couple other people there. And I go, oh, do you know Philip? And then he goes, oh, no, but I know he's a baller. And then I know what Kyle Shanahan's opinion of Philip Rivers is, and that's why he probably almost got that call to go into the Super Bowl.
I would literally pay a service that would just have people respond with that when people ask if they know me. Be like, oh, Bill Barnwell? Oh, I don't know him, but he's a freaking baller, man. That would be incredible. I would pay thousands of dollars for that service.
There couldn't be a better compliment, could there? Like, no.
That's it. That's exactly like it, that's what I imagine Kyle Shanahan wants people to say about him, which is the ultimate compliment you can pay to somebody else.
Do you think that is fair to have that in, like, that system? That's the thing. That's why it's tough. It's like, Purdy is playing well. That's why I don't want to take away.
Right.
But it's just that there are other quarterbacks that I think have the traits to get this job done just as well. That's kind of where I parse this. And I know that's tough.
Right. And what makes this so hard is that, like, yes, we talk about the influence of Purdy in this system, and that matters, of course. And you know, you discount Purdy, but the thing people forget is, like, it's not like the other 31 starting quarterbacks are playing in an average system that doesn't help them or doesn't hurt them at all. Like, every quarterback is playing under unique circumstances. It's like talking about, you know, a baseball player in Coors Field. Like, yes, a hitter is going to benefit from playing in Coors Field, but this is also pre-Humidor Coors Field. I don't know what the Coors Field park effects are now, but let's just go back 20 years. The Coors Field.
I think it's still relevant. So
I think it's still good. Pretty good. So, but, like, you know, like, the everyone's going to be better in Colorado, but everyone's also playing in unique circumstances in their own park. Everyone's playing with unique benefits and disadvantages in their own system. So
I look at it as, like, you look at any sport or a competition that uses a judging scale. They are graded on the difficulty of the tricks and moves they are performing and how cleanly they do them. But a skateboarder attempting a 900 is different than a skateboarder just doing 360s over and over. That's not me saying that. That is like just me trying a 360. That is an actual professional skateboarder at the X Games. But figure skating or gymnastics, any of those sports, and that's why it's like, wow, they did that move really, really well. But that guy over there is attempting, like, stuff that we never even heard of. Mm-hmm. And he's completing it or doing that trick or doing that move. And I think that's kind of how you have to kind of do this, to talk about this, and how you have to tier them if you're talking about building a team or how they're playing well right now in the system that they're in.
That's totally fair. So let's finish up with this question, Nate. Impossible to say, but I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. Brock Purdy is a bargain right now. He's making $870,000 this year. Still has two more years left on his deal. When his contract comes up, if Brock Purdy is this caliber of player, no better nor worse, over the next two seasons, and he becomes eligible for an extension, his contract is up, he's ready to get a new deal if he's healthy, which we're hoping he will be, would you, as Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, make a significant investment in Brock Purdy, or would you go out and try to find another cheap quarterback in the same vein as Purdy, hoping if we have the right pieces around him, he will thrive?
If I had one in the back pocket, another young day three guy we drafted, or day two guy even, or something of that sort, I would be fine maybe moving on. But it's, you know, one in the hand, two in the bush kind of thinking.
For sure.
You also have to, in a couple of years, how is this roster going to look? I think the roster is extremely good, and I think everyone knows that. But, you know, things happen. Payments, injuries, all things change very quickly, and not for long. The NFL stands for that in a lot of ways. So right now, I wouldn't commit to him. I would not be comfortable doing that yet. In a couple of years' time, he might develop. He might just all of a sudden just like,
he's already developing. He's better this year than he was last year.
Absolutely. And that's, again, I want to praise him for that. And that's why this discussion is so nuanced. But it's like, he might develop. He just might add layers. And you don't know how these guys just shoot through the moon or just drop off. And so that's why it's hard to commit right now in October 2023. But it's, if he's on this path and they do have this good system, yeah, I would keep him around, at least on I wouldn't pay him top tier money, but at least money that you could work around that makes sense for them. You don't want to cripple a team and do the Daniel Jones stuff, you know, and then make that hard to navigate. But, or you do a deal that gives you an out afterwards, the Geno Smith contract. Mm-hmm. And I know, I think that is something that would be make more sense to maybe what he is right now anyways. So yeah, at this point in time, I would not give him command and say big money. I'd either have another answer or look to find that kind of upper middle class kind of deal.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Totally fair, Nate. Very nuanced, very thoughtful. The important parts of our Brock Purdy discussion. Make sure you talk about Jeff George. Make sure you hit Philip Rivers. Those are the essential parts of a Brock Purdy conversation, which is why I needed to have you on to have this talk. Nate, where can people check out more of your brain on the NFL?
Well, whenever a USMNT match is happening, you can see it on me and my brain on Twitter. But yes, you can find me on Twitter, Nate_Tice, either some obscure football clip, all 22, a wrestling reference, or I don't know. That's all I got about this point in time. Simpsons, been watching Simpsons a little bit more. Treehouse of Horror season. But also you can find my writing at Yahoo. My column's up every Thursday. The Overhang this week, going to be talking about, potentially, we'll see, offense is struggling right now, red zone scoring, whole bunch of stuff. Also talking about Byron Young, edge player for the Rams, rookie. Might be dark horse for defense rookie of the year right now.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you could also find me speaking words on the Athletic Football Show Sunday nights, Thursdays, all the time. I'm on all the time. Also doing Prospects of Pros with Dane Brugler. Just stuff everywhere. No Twitch streams, but YouTube, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Nate, you know it's a blast having you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me ramble.
Always, my friend. Always. All right, Nate Tice, always the best. Love having Nate on. Talk about Brock Purdy. I want to finish up here and talk about the Jets defense. And ready to not make friends with Jets fans this offseason. I'm sorry to say that's going to continue to be the case, because I think the Jets defense is good. It was great last year by any measure. It was fantastic last year. By just about every measure this year, it is not as good. We're still talking about them as a great defense relative to the rest of the NFL, but they have taken a very meaningful step backwards last season, even given that they took over and won the game against the Eagles last week. And I'm going to run through some numbers for you, because obviously numbers are not perfect, but they do give us some semblance of independent analysis. The numbers are not going to be swayed by what the Jets looked like last season, what the expectations were heading into the year. The numbers are the numbers for these teams. And so the Jets are not a great defense by the numbers. They're 12th in the NFL in points per possession. And you might say, okay, Jets offense is bad. They probably faced a ton of drives. They probably start with terrible field position. I would think those things were true, but that's not the case. They faced a slightly above average number of drives, and they've had the eighth best starting average field position in all of football, which goes a long way. Their defense has been in relatively good spots so far this season. They faced a tough schedule, but DVOA adjusts, at least partly right now and more as the season goes along, for not just the quality of the opposition, but the game situation, the down, the distance. The Jets are 13th in DVOA. Expected points added per play, another measure that factors in here. The Jets are 11th by EPA per play. So three measures, I think, all pretty good at telling us how a defense performs. And by those measures, the Jets are good. 11th, 12th, 13th, not top three, which I think is a lot of the conversations we're having about them so far this season. The difference, of course, is that they're forcing crazy amounts of takeaways, which was not the case last year. They forced 16 takeaways in 17 games last year. This year, they already have 13 in six games. They're 3-0 when they force three or more turnovers, 0-3 when they have not. Now, points per possession does not include takeaways, which obviously help your offense, put you in good situations, help improve their starting field position. But DVOA and EPA do. And even with those crazy turnover rates, the Jets defense has not ranked out as a great defense, more as a good one. Contextualize it this way. Let's remove the drives where things end with a turnover. Last year, the Jets defense was very impressive. They were number two in the NFL in points per possession allowed behind the Niners. So when everyone did not end drives with a turnover, the Jets defense was great. This year, when they don't end a drive with a turnover, the Jets defense is 14th. They're behind the Rams, the Bucks, the Lions, the Falcons. These are not teams we talk about typically as having great defenses. And the turnovers matter, of course. They've made a huge difference in their victories over the Bills and the Eagles, and they deserve a ton of credit. But it is tough to count on your defense to force three or more takeaways per game if that's going to be the bar for you to win. I know the schedule gets easier. I know that they didn't have Sauce Gardner and multiple cornerbacks, actually, with Sauce Gardner being the most notable one in that win over the Eagles. I think it's impressive they were able to pull that off without, in I think by a lot of people's measure, either the best cornerback in football or one of the two or three best cornerbacks in football. But this defense has taken a step backwards. It's being propped up by those takeaways right now. And when the Jets do not sort of inevitably get 3, 4, 5 takeaways per game, I would be concerned. They did allow 30 points to the Cowboys. They allowed 21 points to the Broncos, who are a disaster on offense. They've allowed the 6th most first downs of any team in the league this year. That stuff matters, and it is going to come into play. So one of three things will happen. Either the Jets will continue to turn the ball over, or not turn the ball over, but continue to stop turnovers at a league-high rate, which they have talent, not out of the realm of possibility, tough to do, but not impossible to imagine. They will greatly improve their underlying level of play and be much better on those drives where they don't force turnovers, or I think the most likely scenario, the turnovers will regress towards the mean. They will continue to have more injuries than they had a year ago, and the defense will be good. 10th, 11th, 12th good, but not elite. Well, hopefully it did not anger too many Jets fans, although I think I already have most of them blocked at this point, but we will see. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Different perspectives from Nate on the Niners. They get a really good Brock Purdy conversation. Hope you had fun listening to us nerd out about football. We'll have more audio coming next week, more topics to talk about here as we approach the midway point of the NFL season, already week 7 here on the Bill Barnwell Show. So thanks so much for listening.